coming up.
Aluta continua. Let us be, because I'm also worthy of living my own life. Give me that freedom.
Facts.
Yeah. So yes, it's dangerous because they're like, oh, it's like Rufilo, but also you're not the same as other people, like as in you're not the same as other people with albinism. But if we do not show the tenacity or just the normality in how we live, how will the rest of society learn to recalibrate itself to accept us as we are?
Hi, it's Dr. Nokanya Kanyilele Nanke, and welcome to Let's Talk Man podcast. Now, I am not a man, as you can see, but we know that on this podcast, it's six South African medical professionals who are out there to change South Africa's perception and the world's perception about health and how we talk about it through conversations. I'm very excited today because they brought me back. No, Nhlanhla, I didn't hide in the studio. and like, wait for my
anywhere.
Moment.
She was like, Suhail must go now.
No. I did go home. We had a conversation about this. But today I'm really excited to have the conversation we're going to be having because I'm here with our good friend, Dr. Nhlanhla Vilakazi. How are you, sir?
I'm all right. How's it going?
Good. How was the week?
It's so nice to see you here. No, the week has been good. You know, hectic, working, you know, solving eye problems as usual. But yeah, we're here and let's do this.
Yeah. So we are here with the Gents Clinic, which is an online service. But you know that in South Africa, there's a lot of conversations that we need to have. And I think I personally enjoy it because when I get to speak to people in real life, that's one of my favorite things to do. And today we have an incredible guest. She is a multifaceted human being, not just an award winner in multiple countries, I might add, not just for her acting, but also an author. Recently, I'm very excited to talk about that. And also, according to CNN, in 2014, the world or Africa's first model with albinism. That's not the only thing that she's all about. And I can't wait for you to delve into everything that we're going to talk about. Please, can we welcome Rufilwe Mdisele?
Hi, doctors.
Hey, girl, how you doing?
I'm good, sunshine.
Yes.
Good to see you.
I mean, it's so weird to like kind of introduce myself and say hi again because we've been chatting.
Yeah. But for protocol, we got to do it. You know, got to do it for the people.
Yeah, so I'm so excited that you're going to be here because we're going to be speaking about a lot of things. One of them being the diagnosis of albinism, or what we as medical professionals know as oculocutaneous albinism. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into that. But before we do, for those of you who have been hiding under a rock, and for the people who might not know your story, who is Rufilwe and why is it that we are here sitting with you, and what is the story that you have to share with us?
Well, Rufilwe Mdisele, Rufilwe Vinita Black Mdisele.
Yes.
Is a visionary. And I say visionary because you've said earlier, multifaceted. I'm known as Africa's first successful model with albinism, but turned award-winning actress, TEDx speaker, MC, voiceover artist, team building coach. The list goes on and on and on. But recently, a published author for a first of its kind children's book called Zizi's World Through Her Vanilla Eyes.
Congratulations. It's absolutely beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we're going to be speaking about it. I mean, it's already here. Mm-hmm. And you can see the colors, the bright words. And I mean, I'm a pediatrician, so anything that is for the babies, I'm here for. How did you grow up? What was your upbringing like? Where are you from?
So Rufilwe was born in Soweto, Rockville. But my parents moved out when we were about 4 years old, moved to the city. Better life, better aspirations, thing, basically. And then I lived in the city for about a while until we settled down in Orange Grove, like completely. I'm the first of three girls. A lot of people might say my sisters and myself, well, all of us collectively are like the Kardashians of South Africa, but without the plastic and the extreme wealth. But yeah, you know.
The extreme wealth, yes.
Maybe it's coming.
The extreme wealth, yes.
Absolutely. Thank you. But yeah, and we've got brains. We've definitely got brains.
Come on.
But I'm the eldest of three daughters. I come from a normal upbringing, and I'll say normal because I had both parents. Unfortunately, dad passed away from age 11. But other than that, I went to good schools. had a difficult upbringing just all around with the passing of dad. But other than that, I'm just a person who grew up quite normally in some context. To others, not, but to myself. Normal.
No, man, just to pick up on that, I mean, thanks a lot again for taking and blessing us with your vanilla.
Vanilla black.
Yeah. I just want to understand a bit more about your childhood, you know, growing up with the condition, albinism. How was it like? How would you... Yeah, just a bit of background.
So basically, if you think about it, I was born in the 1980s, late 1980s, apartheid era. So I'm a black child with a white skin. I was born in an era that has a lot of racial segregation. So the dynamics are already against me, just all around. I'm from the township. Being from the township, there's a lot of talk, but not being cognizant of that talk because of the home that I came from. So essentially, my parents were very loving. They gave me, my family all around gave me a cushion to not really identify with my albinism. So meaning that there was never a conversation about my albinism from home, within the home. That realization of albinism only came from exterior because of my experience from people. It would either be the talk from the kids, but not really understanding. Children are not really cognizant of certain things. And it would either be the conversations that would be happening around, but eventually kids develop a inquisitive nature when they don't understand certain things. And then you're like, Mom, why are these people talking about me? Like, what's happening?
Yeah,
why
am I being called names? Yes,
or why are adults even looking at me funny? But I think because I was so oblivious to a lot, or like I was the most confident, cheerful, happy, bubbly kid. It just did not register. Nessa kokot.
Yes.
Something is not matching. You know, the combos are not communicating in society properly. So eventually, I think my experience of being out in the world is what presented my condition to me and not necessarily my parents having the conversation. And with that being said, you learn for yourself. I don't think there was ever a time where my mom sat me down. She would rather encourage certain things like, no, don't listen to, so gentle parenting, no, don't listen to what people have to say. People have words of nasty or whatever, but never to say, you have albinism. So it came from outside. The realization came from outside.
That's a real, like, rarity, especially in the time that you were growing up and in the community that you were in. And I think even now, I mean, as healthcare professionals, all the time when we're counseling families, there's a lot of fear, there's a lot of stigma when it comes to not just mental illness or mental diagnoses, but physical conditions. And I think, you know, from a medical point of view, oculocutaneous albinism is a condition that's a genetic thing. So it's not like there's a thing hereditary that someone did. There's not a, you know, there's a not medication that you took. So I just wanted to go into that with you because I think a lot of the time we expect that, okay, when there is a certain diagnosis, whether it's albinism or any other diagnosis, you know, healthcare providers are going to give you all the information you're going to have. You're going to have a clear plan and it's good to go. So from you're now talking about like understanding that you are different medically from other people. What was that kind of journey like? And I think also if we can talk about some of the complications or associations of albinism that you experienced.
Sorry, I know. I don't want you to lose your train of thought. But just picking up on that kind of, you know, another thing I've noticed that we also very bad at doing is explaining. Because I mean, I'm sure your mom would have really loved to have a chat with you and tell you about the condition, but imagine sitting down with a pediatrician or an ophthalmologist and hearing that, okay, mommy, you have a chromosome 13 and what, you know, your child
chromosome
has this
11.
And that.
Chromosome 11.
You know, some of these conditions are not so easy to you know, to explain to a layperson. And I'm sure they might have tried multiple times because she probably was wondering, like, why me or whatever, you know, parents go through or whatever. So, just for us as medical professionals, we also don't do, you know, the most, I personally think, in terms of explaining.
It's true because it was only late, I think, when I released the book, only like now, during the... the, what do you call this thing? The launch. Then my mother explained, like, in front of people to say that when my child came out, I was actually so confused. I was like, is this my child? Like, hey, what's that like? We're like,
yes, I'm a black lady. I've got a white
like,
baby.
What's going and on? Then, you know what I'm saying? And I think it's really that, unfortunately, because of, I don't want to say the lack of explanation, but also I think we come from an era where, unfortunately, doctors didn't really have the fine-tuning or finesse to say, let's be sensitive about how we explain certain things. And also the rarity of certain conditions brings an environment where doctors are not really also able to articulate because they might not have the full scope of what it is. And that's what I realized is that, oh, okay, your child is albinism. There's one, two, three. So there's the textbook aspect of knowing it versus the actual lived experience and understanding it fully through also as a medical practitioner. So the sensitivity is not really there, and which makes it hard to then explain to a parent. Versus now where we're more knowledgeable and where, you know, there's like a there's like an understanding, there's a kindness and there's an essence to say, mama, this is what's happening, one, two, three, but knowing as well how to handle the parent. Then it was like, okay, your child has albinism, mama, this is what you're going to use, make sure that you have sunscreen, one, two, three, and that's it, and you go home and you figure it out. So there was no counsel to it as well. And I think that's why for my mom, she had to also figure it out for herself. There were no real books also back then, if you think about it. I am plus 30 years in my late 30s. And when you think about then and the amount of information that was there, it was rare.
I mean, they only had textbooks back then. They didn't have the internet.
That's why I'm
they
saying
have
the theoretical like versus the practical. As a doctor, you're coming from school, you're getting told chromosome 1, 2, 3, 11, 13, this, that, but you're not getting the lived experience of what it is, because it's something that isn't what you're exposed to every day. Because that's another thing. Albinism is such a rare thing. It is. Hardly see albinism every day in your career. And if you do, you can count the number of people that you come across. So it was difficult for, I think, my mom having to get to that stage. How do I explain to my kid? Because where does she start, first of all? But the only thing she can do is shelter the child and probably even take heed to understanding the, unfortunately, the misconceptions that are around it in giving that protection instead as a parent. So instead of acting from a point of, I think her protection was her protection was always trying to be overprotective over me. And it's in the care, it's in the not really explaining, but coming from a place of, don't play in the sun for too long, wear your sunscreen. When we're at school, the educators, there's a conversation that needs to be had. To say our child cannot see properly, please be cognizant of that. And from a psychological and emotional perspective, look, I think I lived in an era where people honestly were not really quite sensitive about handling things which were quite different. So everybody was trying to figure it out.
I want to come back to that because we'll talk about some of the stigmas and some of your experiences of those. But, you know, we've been saying this word albinism a lot and terms. If you've got an incredible niece and another one coming along the way, if her or one of her friends had to come and ask you, what is albinism? And maybe someone else who's even watching now had to ask, what is this condition called oculocutaneous albinism? What would you say for them to understand it?
In layman's terms or in basic terms, it is the lack of melanin in the body. So essentially, we all have layers to what makes our final skin. So, unfortunately, there is something called melanin in your body that the mother does not then produce that is enough to then give me my final layer. So, I'm supposed to be brown-skinned. But, unfortunately, my mother did not have enough melanin in her body to produce that final layer. So, it's a lack of that.
And so, just for everyone at home, because there is, like we said, it's genetic. It's what they call an autosomal recessive condition. So, when you have a baby, mom gives genes, dad gives genes, and those mix to create the baby. And so, what you find is that there's usually two copies, and autosomal recessive means mom gave the gene that doesn't work and dad also gave the gene that doesn't work. And so your body is not able to produce that melanin. And oculocutaneous, meaning it affects your eyes. So as you said, vision, there may be squint vision that you get as well. Yeah. And then the coloring of the eyes is affected, which is melanin, which causes the... And then cutaneous being your skin and your hair, which can appear either very, very light or some, you know, because there's seven different types of oculocutaneous.
Some it's not that light. Yes. Yeah.
The most common one obviously being type one, but there can be various grades from no melanin at all the way through to people who just have some of the eye conditions.
Yes,
and then, of course, there's a high propensity for skin cancer. And you were speaking about why it's important to stay out of the sun and also why it's important for sunscreen. So, just I'm thinking now as a small child or even like a person who wants to play kokasi. I mean, kokasi outside in the streets is where it was at.
Exactly. Okay?
Yeah, exactly.
Your mom is now telling you, Rufilwe, you can't stay outside. You need to come back and you need to wear sunscreen. You need to wear a hat. And other people as well who might not know that this is who you are walking around, exposing. You know, you want to go visit your friend, et cetera, et cetera. Yes. How was that growing up for you? Because I know in African communities, there are a lot of stigmas and a lot of conversations. Yeah. What was that experience like for you, even though you say that your mom really didn't make you feel like you were any different?
Look, I think the experience was, like I say, as a child, you're oblivious to a lot. And I was actually saying to Dr. Ntata earlier on that I think I was a rebel from just being a kid, honestly and truly speaking. The things that I should not have done, but I did anyway because I was given the freedom to, but with a care. I think for me, as much as yes, there was the idea of not playing too long in the sun, it was an understanding because it was like, oh, okay, you get sunburn. It's just that thing. Like the combos will communicate and make the whole thing will make itself understood to you that when you play in the sun, you are going to get sunburnt, right? And it happens. Like it will happen. You get sunburnt. Then it doesn't look nice. Then it doesn't feel nice. Then you don't do it. So it became like a norm to me. The sunscreen aspect, because it was a regimen that was normal and something that was put in consistently, it became just first nature for me to do it. But obviously during sports and stuff like that, there were moments where I felt like, oh, you know, I can't do certain things that other kids can do for a long periods of time because, you know, I'm not allowed to, I'm not really permitted to, or there is an extra care to say, you know, if there's physical education and we're doing swimming, like during the swimming period, you find that maybe the teacher's saying, hey, you know, let's put more sunscreen on you or Rufilwe, you know. I wasn't even Rufilwe back then. I had a different name.
What was your name? The mystery woman?
No, it was Bella. It was Bella.
Mm-hmm.
So Bella would have to put sunscreen on when it was things like, remember in high school or even primary school, you had those house... What do they call it now?
Yes, the house days where everyone is like the house days house
with
colors.
The colors and stuff different like that. Colors. And there were activities. You find that I'm not really getting involved in certain activities. And with things like I wasn't great at hockey, but I played it anyway. Eyesight not realizing that, girl, your eyesight is that bad. But I forced myself to play sports. Okay. Like, you'd find that I can't do baseball. I wanted to play netball very badly. But because my eyesight was not great, I couldn't do those things. So I kind of, like, felt in some way, shape, or form. But as a kid, you don't really understand those things until you're a lot older. Say, okay, that's why I couldn't do this. Because, you know, my eyesight was not great. And I understand. And it's okay because there were other things I was strong at.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And then just going back to sport.
Yeah.
Especially school. Sport.
Yep.
You know how competitive kids can get.
Mm-hmm.
How were you surviving, you know, life in school and sport and bullying, especially in this country? Well, actually, anyway, kids in school.
Look, as a kid, and especially, I don't think I played a lot of sport in primary school. Mm-hmm. I think I got very adventurous in high school because now you just buy free wheelie. I just want to be me and live my life growing older.
Yeah.
I think... in high school was when I started really to like explore. And one of the sports I explored, but let me not lie, I started hockey in
in primary school.
Yeah.
And then obviously high school. But I could never make it to the A team, right?
Yeah.
And that's for obvious reasons, because your eyesight is not great. So your coordination is not going to be great. Yeah, but mere fact of that, I was playing hockey meant a thing to me. Mm. But I felt terrible because I always wanted to make the A team. Mm. And I never could get to the A team. But people didn't explain, or there was no explanation to say, girl, don't feel so bad. Your outside sucks, you know? But even outside, but even with baseball, you find that during physical education, they make us play baseball. And yet, the ball, girl can't see where she's hitting. Or nobody's going to tell you that you're terrible.
I mean, if it helps, there's some people who can still see and they also can't play. So yeah. it's really bad.
I think nobody wanted to make me feel terrible because, I mean, I was a special kid, you know? So I think people were just really sensitive about that, but not to tell me that, girl, you really suck. Like, come on, you can do it. Come on. So I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for the support. But naturally, as every person, there were moments where I felt like I was not good enough, you know?
Mm.
And I think that's the tough part is... It's just that when you're navigating life without certain things being made sense to you, then it becomes slightly difficult. And I think that also gave me a bit of an overachiever aspect, because if I wasn't good in one place, I wanted to be absolutely like top bar in all the other places, whether it was art, whether it was my academics. If I was lacking there, I needed to be extra in other places.
Mm.
Yeah.
Definitely. So you've now grown up, you know, you are not going to be baseball provincials or A team, but
oh my heart, no colors. Sorry. I can get academia, but no sports.
So here you are, this overachiever who's now going out into the world, and you chose the world of fashion, media.
I didn't choose it.
It didn't. Tell me about that.
I didn't choose it. It chose me.
Mm.
A lot of people don't know that I was a nerd, like super nerd. So never mind the whole little Mister. But I was a nerd, like nerd glasses, everything, you know. And there's nothing wrong with that, mind you. It's just obviously growing into yourself and finding your feet as to who you are and your character. And I always saw myself, because I come from an academic home, my dad was academic, so academics were very like they were the strong point in the hold of what was in the home. Creative wasn't really like a big thing. But the thing is, I was an art student, an excellent art student, like a art student. But dad was very heavy on academics. Mm. So I never really saw myself in the arts completely. And you must remember that I'm in an era where, or in a time frame, or in a life at that point, that doesn't really open one with a person with albinism with the idea of being in the media space, with the idea of being in the arts. The only reference I had ever seen of a person with albinism that was in the arts was Salif Keita. But even then, I didn't think that for myself. In the modeling industry, it wasn't really there. It was years later that I found out the first model with albinism in the world was a woman called Connie Chu, and she was Chinese. So for context for myself, I'd never really seen that for myself or aspired for myself. And because I came from an academic home, it was like, oh, you know, I'm going to be a big business wig, you know, and everything. My dad was an accountant. My mom was a secretary, you know. Later on in life, she became office supervisor. It was like I came from a home that was not really into the arts. And when the arts did come into play, it was because I had an artistic background, but I didn't know that that would play out also. And my mom says to me, you used to pose a lot also as a kid, like you would be Little Miss Pose and everything. Lo and behold, at age 13, I would be discovered to be a model.
Yeah.
You know, to do my first shoot, five-page fashion editorial for Y Magazine back in the day. It was just like, it was high school. There was a girl who was my senior, whose sister worked in a boutique. Mm. She was like, hey, you know, you're so interesting. My sister's doing a shoot. Would you be interested in doing a shoot? And I thought, what's that? Me, shoot. Mom, I want to do a shoot. Yeah, what is that? Why?
It's not a gun. No. Don't worry, Mama. There's also no violence.
Also because it's black parents. There's no reference to that. And especially for a child with albinism, right? Mm. And you're thinking, what gang? Why not? Like, what are you doing? You know? But it wasn't even coming from a bad place. It was coming from a place of my mom being protective.
Yeah.
And a conversation was had where incredible Sheldon Gopman, He was a stylist back then, but also a designer who, well-respected, who came to have a meeting with my mom and say, your daughter is gorgeous. We'd love to use her for a shoot. It was the year 1999. Mm-hmm. I was supposed to be the symbol of the millennium and change. Mm. And that's how I literally fell into the modeling career. Mm. It was a bit of a difficult conversation because my mom was like, I'm not sure about this. But because I see my kid in the way that she is, why not? You know?
Yeah.
And she just gave me free rata to really just do what I wanted to do. And that's how I got into modeling. Mm. Lo and behold, she did stop me. I think during my high school years, because it was like, hey, focus on academia. Should it follow you? We'll know that this was your path or your destiny. And it did follow me. And then everything else just popped off after my matric year in terms of just modeling. Mm. We had forgotten. But God was like, sorry, child, I'm sending you back in because there's a reason why I'm doing this with you. And, you know, destiny just opened itself up.
Mm. Yeah. You speak a lot about things happening and choosing you and kind of like finding you in the spaces that you're moving through the world. Mm. I want to talk about your mind, because for me, it's always mental matters is my baby. Yeah. And the reason I started Mental Matters was because, or I collaborated with my partner, was because as a medical professional going through that journey, I try to understand why was it that some of us were more resilient than others.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, we got the good marks, we were able to like pass and, you know, we had all these accolades when we got to varsity. But what was it mentally from a support system, et cetera, that was causing some people to succeed and some others not to?
Yeah.
So besides your mom, because I think we actually don't realize how much of a part, just the mentality of our parents and how they raise us.
Yeah.
But besides that now, because I can understand that once you know you leave home, there's a lot more time that you're spending by yourself, even though you have your mom as a support system. What did your mental health look like going from, you know, being a young child, being in this amazing environment where you are just living your life, being who you are, going into high school where everyone kind of is aware that, okay, it's a vision issue, but it's not necessarily that you aren't applying yourself and, you know, and then we go out into the big world of international
and you're knocked by the reality of everything that you're faced with.
How did your mental health, if it did change, but how did you maintain that during that transition?
Look, I went from being, I did get bullied in school, mind you, you know, but I think I didn't really realize I was being bullied. I just thought, oh, you know, girls are just nasty to each other, because I went to an all-girls school. My life, I went to
girls an all-girls school. You are stronger than me. I said, Dad, Mom, take me out the cameras.
No, I went to an all-girls school from primary to high school.
Sure.
So I think, number one, the resilience was always there, but also at the same time, obviously, being in spaces like that, there's a lot of competition. There's a lot of feeling like I was not worthy in some aspects. But lo and behold, that shoe changed, my man.
Amen,
that changed it. Oh, I'm in the pages. You ain't in the pages. I as a model, you nuts. What you gonna say now?
It kind of sort of clicked like that. Girl, it is what it is.
It kind of sort of put that in. Though, you know, it's not to say I had a big head or anything. I've always been like a bubbly girl. But I think it gave me a sense of worthiness to see that I could be represented out into the world like that. But you still go through the normal. For me, I always say it wasn't the albinism challenge. It was the challenges of growing up and just being a teenager.
Yeah. Mm.
So my mental health came from there. It was feeling like I was not pretty enough for the boys to gravitate towards me. It was feeling like I was not good enough in certain aspects, and hence the overachiever aspect, going back to the mental health aspect. It was dealing with the firstborn child syndrome and having to also mentally, because of the passing of my dad, I grew up very quickly. So you must understand that also kind of geared me into a way where my thinking and the way that I did things was very different. So, and also the experience of the albinism. So the duality of many things that have happened, and traumas included, will clock you to either go lopsided or go extra. And the extra could be just pa, 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 pa. And sometimes you find that you're operating in autopilot without realizing it until you get too older and identify that shucks.
Sure.
I think the majority of my life,
my coping mechanism with a lot of things was to dive into the things that I wanted to do or was doing. Mm. Because then I was shutting out everything else that was negative or everything else I did not want to deal with, or finding a way of dealing with my traumas. So trauma can either make you really like go really, really like down or it can bring you to a psh, depending also on not only the I don't say the strength that's been given from home, but you also have to develop that for yourself. Making sense of that also holistically for yourself. So I won't lie, God was a big factor in my life and giving me a backbone to become the person that I needed to be. I don't know where I would have been had I not been spiritually grounded or been given that to hold on to from a very young age.
That's incredible.
Yeah, really amazing.
I'm a phenomenon.
You actually...
I'm an anomaly.
Actually are.
Yeah.
And I think it's so reassuring to me, as what you said was so powerful. You were like, yes, I was living with albinism, but I was still a human being living through high school, living through bullying, living through the same insecurities about boys. So my difficulties
didn't come from albinism academics. Entirely. It didn't. It came from the normal aspects of... the tragedy of how I lost my dad, you know, of dealing with that trauma, of the way it happened, of all of that. It's dealing with now you are your mom's anchor. How do you deal with now being the firstborn? How do you deal with the pressures of growing up? How do you deal with teenagehood and everything that it comes with you? In an all-girl school, there's this beauty factor. Yeah. It's your academics. It's like, whoa, I come from being an A student in primary school, high school. I'm going to an academic school and whoa, it is rocking me. All of that that's happening is just rocking me. So life was just lifing for me. Yeah. Not necessarily entirely based on albinism. Exactly. The albinism was like a really minimal factor to everything else that was going on. So I believe also my experiences shaped what I was to handle in life. Yeah.
Yeah. Just another one. I mean, we have to also be realistic. You know, we stay in South Africa where...
Absolutely.
There's also a lot of cultural beliefs and misconceptions, myths around albinism and... you know, what people believe and think, you know, sort of the supernatural powers that you might... You've heard it all.
I've got magic.
You've heard it all. I just want to know, I mean...
I'm magical.
You're a girl, but not like that.
Not that one.
Not that magic.
Not that one. Not that please kind of don't cut my limbs.
No, please.
For dollars. No. Please don't do it. I really will not bring you in like that. As a belief... Please do not rape me to cure of HIV and AIDS.
Yes.
Yeah. It will not happen. Mm-hmm. Please do not think that I will not get buried. I will disappear. I will go into a coffin, go down the drain as normally as anybody else. Okay?
Yeah.
Please. Yeah. You know, miss the misconception that, oh, we don't date. Like, hey, you know, I never find a normal man. Nobody will love me. Honey, men love me.
Yes.
Okay, I just can't find the right one.
Because men are not just trash because of a look. They're just... you're not trash.
Men are just the problem because they need to fix themselves. No,
this
they
is
just
still
need
Let's
to
Talk
fix.
Man, right?
Yeah.
Let's Talk Man. We're talking about you guys.
No, they just need to fix themselves. That's just an inner deeper... thing,
it's not
know.
The albinism, and it's the man.
It's not the, but I will tell you on the dating factor with albinism, though, it is weird because you find that guys are dating me because they're fascinated. They're like, wait a minute, what flavor is this? It's even they'll gravitate towards like the extreme of not really gravitating. What's going on with this one? Or it's either they'll gravitate towards, ooh, okay, she a fly, but we wonder. Like, we wonder certain things. And it's
like Vanilla Black in the house.
Yeah, but there's also, like, the idea of, there's also the sad part of it, which is, like, guys gravitate towards what they're fascinated with in terms of what society places as a, you know, we've gone from liking skinny girls. Well, gents have gone from going skinny girls to now BBL type to now a specific type. So there's a type that's always introduced to men into society, and guys often gravitate towards that versus seeing the deeper aspect of what a woman offers. Am I wrong?
No. You're absolutely right.
So, you know, so I, you know, so you know, if Naomi Campbell has left the building and Beyonce comes in and then Nicki Minaj is the flavor, then we got a problem, you know. Then the filler might not necessarily be the thing, but guys might fall in love with her because they see everything else that she offers.
Exactly.
They forget, oh, wait a minute, you know. Yeah, you know, she's a different kind of pretty, hun, you know. But also, we see the heart. We see impato. We see, you know, guys are not married yet. There's a reason. God is...
And then that yet is very important. God, apologies, Infanta, we cut you off.
Yeah. We are so very sorry.
So, but I know, I think you got the gist of my question, right? Yeah. But I think what I wanted to get to is in terms of safety. Mm-hmm. Do you ever feel like, you know, you need to now put on an extra layer of... I mean, we already have a problem of... Exactly.
Yeah, I do.
Is it?
Look, going back to what you were saying earlier, South Africa is a traditional country with its cultures. But when you get out of South Africa, you do get told that South Africa is a lot more liberal. Right? I have the luxury of living in a country that offers me a freedom to be who I am, but also nginenkani. Meaning that I've got a fire in me that says, don't touch me.
Yeah.
And I think I get it from my mom. I have that thing that says, you dare try touch me. Try touch me and I will hurt you back, basically. I've had to unfortunately have that. When you speak about that extra layer, try kill me, and you'll see a super saiyan. Try touch me, you will see super saiyan. And unfortunately, that's not every person with albinism, right? Yeah. But it also comes from a mindset. For me, it was crazy when I had to go for a work trip to Zanzibar. That's Tanzania. Tanzania has the highest rate of albinism killings, according to the myths and misconceptions, in terms of like body parts, mutilation, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. And people thought I was crazy for going to Zanzibar. I actually got asked, are you mad? I said, I will go to Zanzibar. I will take that risk because I'm not going to stop living my life.
Come on.
Because of my albinism. It's a dangerous thing to do. But also, if you do not have that thing that gives you a strength to go out into the world and be tenacious and do what you want, you'll never teach people how to treat you if you don't have that thing. And for me, it's important to teach people that. Yes, I have an extra armor, but I'm not going to live my life in fear because of a condition and because of stupid people and their misconceptions. And if I'm not an example for the next person to say, hey, Pila, fight for your life, then what's going to happen to every other child that comes after me? So it's changing the mindset according to how you also move. To teach that, Nina, change this thing, this dumb thinking that you've had all this time, and just see us as normal people. Life is to be lived. Aluta continua. Let us be, because I'm also worthy of living my own life. Give me that freedom.
Facts.
Yeah. So yes, it's dangerous because they're like, oh, it's like Rufilo, but also you're not the same as other people. Like, as in, you're not the same as other people with albinism. But if we do not show the tenacity or just the normality in how we live, how will the rest of society learn to recalibrate itself to accept us as we are?
Yeah.
It's like saying, if you live in fear, then you're always going to, hey, man lawyer. Yeah, man, I'm lawyer. Because that's what you constantly are putting in your head.
Yeah.
Why don't you also take responsibility for your life and just say, yo, I live with such a faith and a thing that shields me. Hey, let's go out.
Yeah.
Let's go out and fight for our lives. Finish and laugh.
I think it's also the same thing, like if you had to have a daughter and a son.
Yeah.
You can't now not allow your daughter to do certain things just because she has to work late at night or whatever.
Yes.
So having a condition like albinism or even, you know, having a heart condition, for example, that individual still has things they want to do. Yeah. They still have a life they want
and
to live.
And it's also that they be reckless.
Yes.
Because you're gonna teach them to be like, are you teaching people to be reckless? No. But it's saying gauge your fear or gauge your understanding of where you should be cautious and where it is that you just go,
I'm out of this one. And I think it's very important when it's being pointed out by someone, you know, of your stature, you know, someone who's a role model, someone, you know, a lot of.
By the way, I didn't try and be a role model. I just live my life. I like to actually just say that I live my life.
Yeah.
I didn't say I want to be a role model. I'm not trying to be a role model. I will never profess to be a role model. I'll let society do that for me.
Yeah.
But again, yes, I'm an example that exactly. The next generation or whoever comes after me, they say, man.
I can do this.
It's okay. Come on, you can do it. Yeah.
Good, yeah. So, I mean, it's because I've always just thought to myself, with everything I, for example, grew up knowing and, you know, hearing people speak about, and I've always wondered, you know, how is it like from a person with albinism? You know, do they feel threatened?
Yeah.
Look,
I slightly do have a different, I will admit, I have a slight unique lived experience as opposed to the everyday person who's from maybe the village, who's maybe from circumstances that really didn't permit or feel how it is that they receive certain things. So yes, but it doesn't mean that I'm exempt from the real experience I have. The only difference is that my destiny on I chose to have a bit different experience also for myself.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't going to be part of that quota or part of what is written in the system to be, this is law. No.
Yeah.
Like I said, we're having a conversation. I said, I am a rebel. You know, I think it just comes from, I don't want to be dictated to. Life, there's a pattern to life. There are rules and there are disciplines to it, but it's not to say that you can't challenge them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, like, rebel, I think, is also, like, a term that you don't need to use for yourself because
I call
you
myself a conservative rebel. That's what it is.
But I think
rebel isn't a bad thing.
Yeah, so rebel would mean, like, you're going against the grain. No, you're finding your own way and you are shaping your own path.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, nobody's an expert at this life thing because we're all... This is our first time doing it. Like,
exactly.
No one else has come back that we know of. No one else has come back to come and say, okay, well, when I was here the last time, exactly. This is what happened.
No, true.
So you are really shaping your own path and living it in a way that speaks to such truth and such like humility also. Because I think it's knowing that's your truth. But for me, this is what I want to do. This is how I'm going to do it. And you've got the support on your side. I think it's really, really beautiful. You are on The Real Network. We are here with Let's Talk Men. I know I'm not a man. But we are so honored today that, you know, the guys at the Gents Clinic have allowed me and Mental Matters to have this conversation with our amazing guest, Refilwe Modisele, who's actually got an incredible book. I was going through this book earlier on and you've got so much to talk about. Who is Zizi and why does she have vanilla eyes?
Oh, shoot. So me and my mastermind science brain, I think I missed being a scientist or being a doctor. Zizi is actually my mother's clan name side. So Zizi, Singabamputi, Jamagas Jatu, Zizi, Lamini. Yeah, so that's yeah, so that was my it was an ode to my mother's side of the family. But with that being said, because Modisele is in the forefront, that's my father's side. But it was also time for me to pay homage in some way. Amazing. To my mother's to my mother's side of the family as well. And Modisele is out there, guys, for centuries to come, but this was exactly it. So I decided to call her Zizi. I didn't call her Fifi, Refilwe, or anything like that, because I didn't want it to be me. I wanted Zizi to live outside of Refilwe and also represent any other child who would be in these shoes of albinism. So Zizi is a representation of albinism. There's been no book for education, I'll say specifically, because maybe there have been books out there, but for education specifically on albinism from a child's level. And it's Zizi's world, because now it's an introduction of this little girl to the world
And through her vanilla eyes, I came up with the term vanilla. So a lot of people might, and I'm not saying the word vanilla, the term to say a person with albinism is vanilla, purely because vanilla is known as a white or cream thing when you look at it, right? Vanilla is white.
White. White, yellow.
Yeah. But its original form is actually a black brown. Seed, black brown seed. So when you manufacture it, it's white. So the juxtaposition of exactly that. I'm a black person with a white skin, hence the vanilla aspect. So seeing through her vanilla eyes is seeing through her albinism eyes. So bringing perspective to the world on a person living with albinism or a child living with albinism and some of those experiences. But it's like introducing the world to what albinism is and filling in those shoes. And I felt it important to write a book like that because there's never been a book like that that represents me. In the entire of education and school, yes, you might see textbooks, but there's never been anything that says, let's actually put it at a child's level and give them a scope into what albinism is, but also teach the child without albinism how to live with differences, to embrace each other, self-love, self-care. So as much as it's albinism, but it actually embodies the differences that are out in the world and how as human beings we need to be able to embrace those differences so that we are better mentally in how we become and where we are right now in our lives.
I mean, this book is, it's firstly that I love it because it's like big, big, nice writing, beautiful colors. I mean, we were chatting about the illustrator, but you literally go around the world. I mean, you're in Soweto. Yes. The girls are in Paris. Lizzie is. She's traveling. She's a world kind. Okay.
She's like, what?
What age did you pitch the book at, excuse me? And also, is this just a book for children to read? Can I read it with my daughter? Because she's four at the moment. So I would love to share the story with her, even if she isn't living with albinism or even doesn't know someone now.
But that's the aim. It's not an, like I say, it's not an albinism book. It's the sum of the themes. The headline theme is albinism, but there are sub-themes to it that relate to everybody. It's a book from age 4 to 12, so primarily primary basic education. But I wrote it in such a way that would speak to an adult as well. Because you must understand that cognizance isn't just based off of like what you're told as an adult in the latter of your life. It also comes from reading things from a basic level.
Yeah.
And I find that there's a lot of education also that needs to be instilled at a basic level as well for a parent to understand. But so I was very deliberate in how I wrote this. I masterminded this thing that as much as a child is reading it, but with the adult like yourself, who's a mom, if you're sitting and you're reading it with your child, there's something that clicks in you. That says, let me ask some questions about myself as a human being. Let me ask myself some questions about being a parent. As an aunt, how am I to my niece, the other siblings that come along, you know, after my niece? How am I going to be as a parent to my own children? So that book just addresses, you know, as much as this albinism and Zizi being introduced in terms of her own understanding of her own condition, but via through the love of her parents and giving her that explanation. But with also something that happens at school that also makes the educator be involved in a scenario like that to have the care and the understanding for a child with a difference. So I also did that deliberately for educators to feel that love and that care and that passion, because I feel like educators have lost that thing. As much as parents are the beginning of how we're introduced to a lot of things and how it is that we grow in the nurturing, that we become just as we grow and become adults, educators also very important in instilling that education or how we are as human beings. Yeah. So it's a balance like that yes, it's the home. I've tackled the home from a parental level. I've tackled education. And I'm now tackling just all around society on a bigger basis.
Sure. That's amazing.
It's really.
Dadla, you have any question you want to ask?
No. I really love the book. So we went through the book together before the show.
And there's an activity
in the pool. Yes, that's actually what I wanted to say, that I just can't wait to sit with my boys when they get to four to play some of the activities
there. By the way, thank you. He said, I can't wait to sit with my boys, because a lot of people look at it and they think, oh, it's a girly girl book. And it's like, no, there's a character for everybody.
Yeah.
And I love that, because you'll be able to sit with your boys and literally have that time to spend with them. I find that in homes, we've lost that bonding time. We've lost that involvement. And it was also key for me to involve the father in such a big way. Hence, there are two parents. Like, there's a mom and there's a dad. Because I want us to also champion having the home back in itself. Whether it's parents who are still married, whether they are co-parenting together. But just the idea of both parents being involved in the kids' lives. Because you guys are important as well. Men are also important, and I want them to feel just as important. It's represented in this book.
Yeah.
To say, let's get back into both mom and dad playing a role, and also just having that time to spend with your children, with the activity at the back of the book. Because there is activity at the back of the book, which also instills not only literacy, but just apart from that bonding time, apart from that imaginative thing, you know, exploring yourselves into the world, but just that idea, guys, of having a book that encompasses everything was so important to me. So I love you that you're saying the boys, because there is a character in the book for the boys.
Oh, nice.
Oh, they'll love it. They'll think it's really funny. They'll be like, oh, okay. And also that girls and boys can forge healthy relationships and friendships. Like, when we say relationships, we talk about friendships.
I think one of my favorite, I mean, the book is amazing, but one of my favorite things is what you call Zizi's word bank at the back, where you kind of give an explanation about certain terms.
Yes, and then the other important
thing, other thing was just your tips for taking care of your skin and eyes. And when I looked through this and we were talking about it, it's not just for children who are living with albinism.
No, it's not.
Or people who are living with albinism. Yeah. It's for everyone.
Yeah.
And so you're kind of reminding us that even though some people have to be more careful about it, we still all have to do this. Why was that important for you, firstly with the terms, and then also just breaking down just general health tips?
Because it's an educational book as well. Yes. It was important because, number one, you have to instill the education. Like, it's not really there. But at the same time, you have to remind people of the basics. So basics is getting to an understanding from that level, so that we get to a place where we do things better. Mm-hmm. So it was very key in doing that, in having the word bank to make it easier for kids to understand, for adults to understand, because the people in rural communities who will read this book, mind you, there's a granny who was not so educated, who will read this book and needs to be explained to in simple terms, so that she can also have a bonding relationship or understanding relationship, even for her grandchildren or even amongst adults, just themselves when they have conversations. And that also leads to the care. The minute we start to understand things, we have a better care of them. Mm. And I was deliberate in doing that, in having those tips as well, that yes, there is the albinism care, because very often I get a lot of questions asked from parents to say, so what do I do with the child with albinism? Like, I'm a parent with a child with albinism. How do I take care of this child?
Mm.
And yes, these are just the basics, because it does get deeper. You do have to get deeper from a medical perspective.
Yeah.
But it's like, if we can get those basics right, we put kids in a better position to be more equipped to take care of themselves. But outside of that, it then trickles through to any other child to understand and know that, oh, okay, there's a Zizi that needs to take care of themselves, but wait a minute, I also need to take care of myself, because I see these basics, but also Zizi and I are not that far different.
Zizi
is sensitive, but, and any other child that is a Zizi is sensitive, but we're actually the same at the end of the day. Exactly. We all just need to take care of ourselves.
I think, you know, when it comes to explaining things to children and explaining things to parents as a pediatrician, it's very difficult sometimes for me to make it as simple as possible for them to realize that, yes, this is for you a new thing, for you like something different that you're not used to, you've never heard of it before. There may even be like stigmas and fears you have in your mind. But what I love about Zizi's world through her vanilla eyes is you make the experience of not just Zizi, but the people she encounters completely normal for everyone to go through.
We need to make it a norm. We need to make it a norm. Like, we need to stop ostracizing or othering other things, because When we get to doing the whole othering things, that's when we have a problem in society and we're raising people that become bullies, that become murderers, that become all of these atrocious things basically just in society. And it's based off of psychologically, what have we done or instilled in kids? And yes, it could go lopsided as well, because there's the aspect of giving your child everything and them being something that's like a whole different disaster. But for the most of it, when you start with the good basics on an overall level, you are ensured better results than not giving at all.
Sure. I think that is a beautiful place to end it. I'm so sad because I really want to keep talking to you but I think we can have that. Rufilwe, where can people find you? Where can they get Zizi's World through her vanilla eyes?
They can get the book at different outlets, exclusive books, ethnic kids, books. There's so many.
Yes.
Book Circle Capital. Mm. Exclusive books. Take a Lot. Mm. Macro. Social media platforms. Mm. Rufilwe Modisele. The publishers, Lingua Franca, just reach out to all of those outlets and you will get this book, because kuningi, and especially for a book of this kind, I'm just hoping that I'm praying that it does, the biggest aspect of it is to be in schools.
Mm. Mm.
I pray to God it gets into, I know it's a big, big mission, but to get it into the syllabus.
So now that you've said it, someone who's out there who knows the routes to get it there, please reach out to Rufilwe. Because I think, I mean, if I had my daughter reading this in school, or anyone reading this in school, really, I would feel like, okay, at least this is a conversation starter. I mean, we're not expecting the schools to do everything.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But it's a conversation starter.
Yeah, because it's not just schools who have a responsibility, but as society, as professionals, as people all around, everybody has a responsibility, and it starts with community.
Yeah. Yeah, that's beautiful. Dr. Vilakazi?
I think it's time for some lovely videos. we just want to see what you think about, you know, what people
I wonder
posting.
What's happening.
Hey!
Okay.
Can we have the first one?
Sister Bettina. So what are you guys doing in this fashion industry and, you know, design?
Pushing the boundaries.
Guys, there's creativity, ne? There's creativity, ne? But that is abomination, or... That is abomination. What is the meaning of that behavior? You can call it fashion, but what is it now?
You know, I'm always afraid to like critique all of these unique and thingy ideas much. Because in 20 years, my kids could be like coming home with like a foot on their head and they're like, no. Mom, check my new hat.
But now we're allowing funny things. But also that's another thing is like, where do we borderline like be like,
Like, can we stop?
Like, I mean, did you see the last guy? He couldn't even walk. He was walking like this.
I mean, this fashion, that's called avant-garde, mind you. That is avant-garde. But avant-garde is not avant-garding.
Yeah.
No, that's like, what are we doing here?
What's avant-garde?
You're not even going to wear that stuff. That's the thing. That's the idea of it. I think it's just like a creativity thing. It's just a way of just taking that thing out. I want to take it out. I want to take it out.
Get it.
I want to take this thing out inside of me. I just want to get this itch outside of me to just be a little bit cuckoo. But
you know, whenever I see avant-garde fashion, I kind of think of that thing. Like, you know, when your girlfriend or your wife asks.
But there's avant-garde fashion, and there's scary.
So
especially
that
what's happening now in Paris.
Uh-huh.
It's very scary. I'm like, it's dark. Because this is where the world is going. No.
Let's cut the cameras. Let's go to the next video, please. This box better than the box he was held in. I'm Mama D in the outer. I call him Tabby like doubters. Let me tell you, tomorrow in the gym, I'm there. I'm practicing that
one. I have an orthopod friend who's free as well. Eh? So I'll give you the number.
Would you attempt?
You know, I've been looking at those videos. My heart kind of says, my balance is not balancing. So do I want to balance like that? I don't know. you help me.
Yes, no, I think but once you get on to the thing.
He's the eye doctor, right? Yeah. So
no, you
like
you
maybe
should
you
stay,
must help me so I can you, see no, you what I'm
stay,
doing.
You it's should like, stay away from any of that. Actually, even if you had sight, stay away from that.
I mean, side. Like, no, I think it's also like
yeah,
a balance
I also believe
it because
that's exactly what I thought. I won't lie. When I saw the majority of those videos, I thought about myself. I said, my eyesight is not great. I don't think I'd be, well, I can be the pushing boundary figure and actually didn't. Yeah,
but this was like.
No. I think there's also levels. You can start on the floor, then you get on the table, then you
lie.
Get on the,
I,
you know.
They, I tried it yesterday
guys,
without...
You
oh, you tried it?
No, not on a standing thing. So yes. What I did is I did it on the floor. But you know when you go on your tippy toes and you do it without actually wearing a heel?
Uh-huh.
I was like, because I was trying to figure out in my head, like, what's going on? Is it the heel that's holding? Because I went like this. Yes. I took my leg and then I put it across. I was like, but where is this balance happening? That's what I was trying to understand. I was trying to understand the maths of this.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and how was it?
Not working out. My balance is not good.
Hi, okay, okay. Let's just move on, please, Sister Bettina. Just.
Nothing beats a Jet 2 holiday. And right now, you can save £50 per person.
Why are they making him do it to himself? What's supposed to happen is they tie the string to your tooth when it's loose and to let it come out. Then someone just closes the door. Why are they doing it to him? Like making him do it to himself?
They're teaching him Asian ways.
The what? Asian way of
Asian people
tooth
have
removal.
Have things of doing things. I have a way of doing things at a very
the
young
poor
age.
Child.
Yeah, no, that my uncle did that. I think my uncle, someone in my family did that to me. I specifically
but
remember.
But maybe it was a punishment.
No, so what happens is I was playing and wiggling the tooth and they were like, stop wiggling this thing. And but I'm like, but it's not coming out. They were just like, and it came out in
no, but he's doing it himself.
That's what I'm saying. It's traumatizing.
It's the Asian way.
They're teaching him resilience. Be strong.
No, but you see, that's what I'm saying. It's the Asian way, guys. Asians, have you seen Chinese people? Have you seen? You find the child is already cooking a 7-course meal there. So they're teaching him to be a dentist right there.
A dentist?
That's it.
Hi, that's quite a controversial take right there. I'm just going to wrap up this conversation just in case
this is another video.
Well, Rufino, thank you so much for coming to tell us your story, share your, you know, Zizi's world and your world with us. I think it's really been eye-opening for me just to see how you... The most important thing I think you said to me was that, yes, I am living with albinism, but the same challenges that affect everyone else still affect me. And our mental health, our physical health will just be dependent on that. We're still human beings at the end of the day. And to go out into the world, and what did you say? You're a conservative rebel.
Girl, it's in my TED Talk.
Yeah. So we need to go watch the TED
with
talk.
No reference. Okay. I'm a conservative rebel.
Yes, you are. So from us here at The Real Network with Let's Talk, man, it's been an absolute pleasure to co-host with you, Dr. Vilakazi.
It's been amazing. I love your guys' spirit. I love the difference. And I think this guest was an amazing person to have, especially with you. I think, well, it's Tembu. Who knows?
Would you ever? I never. I can tell you that not personally. I'll fight.
I don't know.
Rufino, I'll fight
family.
Him if he does that to you. Now I'll come and fight.
Stable.
I won't even be conservative. I'll just be a rebel. Not personally.
The Zulu way.
The Zulu way. But thank you so much for tuning in. Please, guys, like, follow, subscribe, share this, because this is a conversation that you don't know someone needs to hear. Yes, it's called Let's Talk, man, but.
We spoke,
woman.
You know, woman, we were here talking. And there's someone out there who could really benefit from this conversation. And also, just the life lessons that we spoke about, the mental health, the physical health, and awareness, breaking down stigmas and improving mental health. We just want to let you know about Mental Matters. So you can follow us at mentalmatters_SA on Instagram or Mental Matters South Africa on Facebook and LinkedIn. If you want to check out Let's Talk Man, the podcast, you can follow them at Let's Talk Let's Talk_Men on Instagram and Let's Talk Men on YouTube. And also Refilwe, please tell us your socials, girl.
My socials, Instagram, Refilwe Modisele, @RefilweModisele. Facebook, Refilo Vanilla Black, Mudisele, Twitter, at Vanilla Black with the Q, ooh, not CK. And yeah, and those are just all the information, where to contact me, et cetera, on my social media platforms.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'm going to close off the way I know, because the one that Suhail did the last time was here was a bit more penetration, and I said, whoa. So I just want to say good evening, everybody. Thank you so much from Dr. Kanyile.